Welcome to VPG's Virtual Water Cooler Chat Podcast, a platform that celebrates the rich tapestry of professional diversity, with a particular emphasis on empowering women. We aim to foster diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA, for all, while recognizing and championing the achievements of everyone as a central pillar of our journey. In our conversations, we explore a wide spectrum of backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives, creating a vibrant mosaic that enriches our collective understanding and strengthens our commitment to diversity and empowerment. Today's virtual water cooler chat guest interviewer is VPG's litigation assistant, Nicole Cohen. Nicole is Nico, the tree frog in the VPG ecosystem. Nicole is a 2023 UCLA graduate, majoring in history. Nicole took her gap year working with Ashley Chung and VPG to learn the ropes of PTAB proceedings and ex parte re-exam before going to law school. Gail Su is a senior counsel on the patent transactions team at Google. Ms. Su is an intellectual property attorney and United States registered patent attorney with experience in all forms of patent-related and intellectual property-related transactions, including inbound and outbound licensing, standard essential patent licensing, video and audio patent pools, complex technology transactions, cross-barrier transactions, and M&A. Prior to joining Google, Ms. Su was intellectual property counsel for Hewlett-Packard Company and then Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, where she supported HP and HPE's global supply chain, partnerships, emerging technologies, tax, and M&A teams. Ms. Su is a co-founder for the Advancing Diversity Across Patent Teams Initiative, or ADAPT. She also volunteers with Street Law and the Legal Education Access Pipeline Program, LEAP. Ms. Su is passionate about supporting the next generation of intellectual property professionals and giving every person the opportunity to be part of that next generation. Ms. Su received a BS and a BA from the University of Texas Cockrell School of Engineering and Plan 2 Honors Program, respectively, and a JD from Harvard Law School.
Hello, I'm Nicole Cohen, and I am Virtual Patent Gateway's litigation assistant, and I'm here with Gail Su. Thank you so much for being here, Gail.
Thank you for having me.
Can I get some insight as to how you got to know Ashley and Virtual Patent Gateway?
Sure. So I got to know Ashley through the ADAPT organization, which I can talk about later. I believe she had reached out interested in working together on DEIA related issues. I spoke to Ashley, was super impressed by all the things that she's doing and kind of wondered how she had time to do all of them. And then we started talking and we're still talking.
Yeah, Ashley's great at connecting, definitely. So as this is the virtual water cooler chat, we like to start things off on a lighthearted note. I'd love to know what three words you feel best describe you.
My first word is planner. So I do like a lot of structure and order, both in my life and professionally, which is why I draft contracts for a living. That's word one. Word two is helpful, which I get this from my dad. So I like to be helpful, which is also probably why I ended up in a client services type industry. Mm-hmm. And the third word that I use to describe myself is mom. So I'm both a person mom and a cat mom. So I have a daughter who's 7, and I think being a mom really did change my priorities in life. And also how I go about doing my work, both, you know, professionally and personally.
I really resonate with the animal mom part of that. I have a dog, Lulu, who I love so much. But yeah, those are some great words. So would you mind giving me some insight as to how you entered the legal field overall and why you specifically chose to practice in the IP space?
Sure. So when I was in fifth grade, I did this mock trial exercise in social studies. And the trial was the colonies versus King George III. And nobody wanted to represent King George III. So finally, you know, the teacher just assigned people. And so I was assigned to represent King George III. And I got really, really into it. So I did this whole like opening statement and closing statement about how, you know, King George III had done nothing wrong. And, you know, how it was all the colony's fault. And it apparently was, you know, convincing enough that the jury voted to acquit King George III. And that was kind of my first experience with anything relating to the law, other than the fact that my parents watched a lot of Perry Mason and Columbo growing up. And so that led to me, the sixth grade me, deciding that I was going to go to law school. And because I'm a planner, I had my law school all planned out and ready to go. And then in high school, somebody and every patent attorney has this where there's this random moment in their life where someone told them about patent law and something clicked in their head. And so in high school, I had a friend who told me this thing called patent law and how if I wanted to be a lawyer, this is something I could consider. But I had to get a science degree, so remember to get that. And then you could have this great, you know, stable career as a patent attorney. And so, you know, luckily for me, the concept of patents wasn't unfamiliar because my dad is an inventor. So he's now at the end of his career, over 70 patents in his name. So I knew what a patent was. And so I didn't really know very much beyond that. But it's like, oh, patent lawyer, oh, that makes sense. So I'll just add this to my career plan. And that's what I'll do. And so that's how I ended up being a patent lawyer. Funny enough, from my, you know, high school and sixth grade self. So I don't know that plans always work out that way. But I guess for me, it did.
I had a similar experience in high school where I in my history class, we had a mock trial simulation as well. And I enjoyed it so much that instilled in me that was going to be my future plan in law. But I think it's interesting how you started off with the awareness that you wanted to go into law, because I feel like a lot of patent attorneys that I've spoken with started off on the STEM track and then fell into law later. Do you think that was because of your dad specifically?
You know, I think a large part of it was I actually applied to different majors at different schools. And, you know, my dad was a chemistry major. And he basically told me that, you know, in case I didn't make it to law school or decided not to go, I was better off as a chemical engineer, which is how I ended up in chemical engineering. No, then, you know, as a chemical engineer. And then I was wondering, why did I do chemical engineering? But go to law school. But it's okay. I made it through.
Yeah, I was a history major, so that probably would have been smarter, but it is what it is. I enjoyed it.
Funny enough, I had a study group of about five or six people. About half of us actually went to law school and, you know, got our degrees. We're not all practicing attorneys. I think one of us works more on the business development side now, but it was strange that I ended up with in a study group with the people in my year that decided to go to law school.
Law school. Yeah, that's really lucky. So to flip onto the DEIA theme that Virtual Patent Gateway is focusing on this year, how has your cultural background influenced your approach to patent law? And what advice do you have for individuals from diverse backgrounds pursuing careers in IP law?
You know, the first piece of advice I always give people is it's not about how you've failed and why you failed, but it's about how you come back from that. And so, you know, one thing that people always joke about in East Asian cultures, particularly, is, you know, you're a kid, you take your test, and your parents are like, why didn't you get a 100? Like, why did you get a 99? And there's this concept of perfection, which I think over time, I found that maybe it isn't so helpful to joke about that thing, that type of thing, because, you know, leads to the model minority myth, right? Is that, oh, Asians are doing fine. You know, they just put their head down and, you know, keep working. And, you know, that leads to kind of the model minority concept. And, you know, a lot of this, you know, comes from the fact that, you know, a lot of people from East Asia are immigrants, and it's hard being an immigrant. So for my parents, so I'm not an immigrant. I grew up in the U.S., but for my parents were. And, you know, at that time, it was, you know, it was tough, right? It was about they had to overcome prejudice. They had to learn to survive in an environment where everything was unfamiliar to them, from the culture to the language. And, you know, on top of that, they didn't have Google to rely on.
Yeah,
there was no safety net, right? And, you know, My parents were actually long distance for a while, but long distance Taiwan and the US, and there was no such thing as FaceTime or any other video conferencing system. They had to actually write physical letters to each other, which would
Oh,
be which would be delivered, you know, 2 weeks later. And so you couldn't just pick up the phone and call someone. That was expensive. You couldn't just fly like the way that you can today. You know, it takes a lot of grit to be able to survive in that kind of situation, right? And there's a lot of hardship there. And you know, what's important in all of that is not, you know, the times that you were super frustrated or, you know, the things that you couldn't get right, but it's about how you survive that. And the skills that you learn to be able to, you know, get to the next day. You know, I tell people that, you know, life can be challenging, and each step of your life there'll be something that challenges you, right? Whether that's personally or whether that's professionally. And sometimes you'll do things and you'll feel like it's a failure or that you can't get through it. But what's important as the end of the day is at the end of the day is how you overcome that, right? And the fact that you are able to overcome that. And you know, there's very few things that you can't overcome, right? In some way, shape, or form.
So do you think that that immigrant mentality has translated into your work ethic now?
I think that I have a lot of me that has that, right? Which is, you know, always make sure you finish your work before you play. Like, why is it not perfect? And so that I actually try very hard not to keep. So like I'm kind of working on balance, and making sure that, you know, I have the appropriate amount of balance in my life to make sure that, you know, I keep my mental health in a decent form, and that I stay sane, and
Yeah,
that,
of course.
you know, it's okay. Like, I'm human. I will make mistakes. I'm not going to be as good as, you know, my boss, for example, who's been practicing twice as long as I have, right? And that's okay. And that I might make mistakes, but it's about how I come back from those mistakes, so, or how I make it better, or how I fix it, and not, you know, the fact that I made that mistake to begin with.
Right, of course.
So those are things I work on. Which, you know, are things that I have to get over from, you know, how I was taught.
I can relate to that. Both my parents immigrated from Iran, so I'm Persian, but I was born here. So definitely there's some of that mentality that was passed down that, you know, you have to unlearn or, you know, figure out how to balance in everyday life. Just it's always a challenge. So, if you're comfortable sharing, could you speak to your experience as a woman and personal color in the legal space specifically?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not easy. As I was preparing for this podcast and reflecting, it actually caused me to remember
Oh,
like
wow.
specific things that had happened that I just have become very desensitized to over time.
Wow.
And I've just found ways to deal with, you know, certain situations, and it doesn't really ring anything in me anymore. And then, you know, it occurred to me that for someone that's at a different stage in their life, that might be useful for them to know that, you know, they're not alone. You know, the first time I walked into an on-campus interviewing session, I was a 2L. This is the formal on-campus interviews, where you go and you go to a hotel, you knock on the door, it's very awkward, and someone opens the door, you go in, and you have your interview. The very first interview I did, which was with a very large law firm, New York based, I opened the door, and the partner who was there looked at me and he said, "Oh, you weren't what I was expecting." And that's probably not what you want to hear on your first interview.
No,
It was
definitely not.
very jarring to me at that time. And there's been a whole series of things that have happened since then that are along the same lines, right? I've, you know, worked with a client once where we were negotiating a deal, and He didn't want to push a point, but that point was very important to the company that I had worked with. And I said, don't worry, this is not a point. They'll agree to it. This should not be something that you're worried about, and it's important for us, so we need to go with it. And we disagreed on how to approach this issue. But I felt very strongly that I was approaching it the right way. And so I went forward with my way, which he was unhappy about. But what happened next was exactly what I thought would happen next. They were okay with it, and we were able to get what we needed. And, at the end of it, he's like, oh, I guess you must have some experience in this. And it's like, yes, yeah, actually, do.
You'd think.
And, just even last year, we did an exercise with some high school students, and we called it career bingo. And it listed we the bingo squares were things that were about, each of the different volunteers. And for me, my square was I was a chemical engineer. I'm sitting there, in the middle of a room with a whole bunch of other people from Google and all these high school students running around. And nobody came up to me and asked me, like, was I the chemical engineer? Because, I don't look like one. And so that's, definitely happened. That definitely happens and, continues to happen. And as somebody that is of an underrepresented group, you have to learn how to be able to cope with that and not continue to perpetuate that in your own practice, which is hard. One of the things that has been studied and that people research is that when you are a minority, you have this like scarce resource thought where you look at the management and you say, oh, there's only one woman there, and therefore there can only ever be one woman, and so I have to compete with that one woman. Whereas if you're part of a majority class, you see, oh, okay, well, there's plenty of people like me, so they'll be able to make room for me. That's not true as a minority. And so a lot of what I have to tell myself, and I spend a lot of time thinking about DEI issues and working on DEI issues, but even for me still, I will tell myself, or I'll catch myself thinking, oh, well, this group already has an Asian female, and therefore we can't support having another Asian female, so I better hold on to here. And I find myself thinking that too my sometimes. And I have to tell myself, hey, that's not true. There's, enough resources to support more than one of a person that looks like me. And, I should make sure that I'm, slowing down, providing the right sponsorship and mentorship so others that are like me can end up where I am. So I have to make sure that, the experiences that I've had and what that leads to aren't carry forward into the future. And I have to be conscious about that.
Well, definitely it's a work in progress, but that has quelled some of my personal anxieties a little bit, in the sense that I've spoken to so many attorneys who've kind of expressed that as a woman specifically, it can be difficult. It's kind of structured as a man's world, but specifically in the legal field. So that's something I was admittedly nervous about in approaching law overall. So do you think when you were in college or in law school, you had to deal with that at all, or is it something that you kind of experienced more once you entered the professional field?
I think there's always the sense that you feel like you've had to fight to where you gotten to, right? Like you have to fight for every last opportunity. They're not handed to you. You have to fight for that promotion or, fight to be heard. While that can be tough, and while we all face that, it's not all bad. Like I
Yeah, of
think
course.
because you had to do that, I feel like I'm better at what I do because I've had to do that. So, there's some there's always a silver lining.
Yeah. Builds up some fight.
Yeah, and there's nothing like adversity to make you stronger, I guess. But
Yeah.
I think the hope is that when my daughter is my age or looking to make the same decisions that I'm making today, she won't be in that position, in that the world will have changed enough so that she doesn't feel what, I feel or what I've felt over the course of my career. And, you know, to be very clear, what I felt as a minority in the legal profession in patents is, you know, very fractional of what my predecessors have felt and the road that they've paved. And the hope is that every generation, it'll be a little bit better. And, you know, hopefully I can do my part in making that better.
That's really great to hear. So hopefully when I enter the field, it'll even be a little better.
You're already in the field.
Yeah, I'm on my way. So to narrow in on the theme, what does diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, or DEIA, mean to you?
DEIA is important to me. And I think we all have different passion projects that, you know, we work on within that. For me, what's most important for me is at the younger part of the pipeline and you know, when people are still in primary education, right? I want kids to not feel limited in what they are capable of achieving and that, you know, they feel like the world is theirs, right? And whatever it is that they want to do and however it is that they define success, they feel that, you know, if they work hard enough, they have a path to that success. So that's my perfect vision of, you know, what I hope the world will look like. And that's actually been true for me even before I had Victoria, my daughter.
Yeah. So are there any steps that you and other practitioners can take to help level the playing field in this landscape and make DEI more present?
For sure. So I guess I can tell you a story of an experience that I had. So I mentor as in a number of different programs, but in one program, I was paired with a student who was first in her family to go to law school, first in her family also to go to undergrad and also even to finish high school. And when I was first paired with her, I didn't know if I would be able to relate to her because I felt like, you know, just looking on paper, her background looked very different from mine. And she had had challenges in her life that I could never hope to comprehend. So I wasn't sure, you know, what good I would even be able to do, right? Other than, okay, sure, I can, you know, read a document and tell you if there are any grammatical mistakes, right? And
yeah,
and I was like, can I really be a mentor to this person? And we had a pretty normal relationship. We were just going, you know, through the motions of going through documents, like revising things. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one day I was talking to her and I felt like she just looked a little bit off. And, you know, I asked what was wrong. And I think she was having one of those moments that we all get where she was doubting herself. And, you know, she mm-hmm. said that there wasn't anyone in her family, in her life that could really understand what she was going through right now, what she was trying to accomplish. And, you know, while you could have the most supportive of families, if they don't actually understand, you know, they're sort of just like nodding along and, you know, they don't understand all of the emotions. And, you know, then she started crying and it's like, oh, I don't know what to do. And so I just said, you know, I've been where you've been in this process. And, you know, from where I sit, like, you've totally got this. You'll make it. It's just a matter of checking off these boxes and you just need to check them off and you'll get there. And I know that because I know who you are and I've been in this place longer than you have. And that was actually what she needed to hear. And it didn't matter that I didn't have the context of her life. It just mattered that, you know, I gave her space, she could vent, and then, you know, I told her it was okay. And my words held some, you know, held some credibility just because, you know, I'm where I am. And, you know, realize that every person in this profession, no matter how senior you are, you have that hour to give to somebody who's earlier on in the pipeline. And if we all collectively gave that 1 hour, that's a lot of good that we can do in the world. And so you know, part of ADAPT's mission, which I guess I'm kind of skipping ahead now, but part of ADAPT's mission is that everyone has this hour and we just need to figure out, you know, where we can slot that hour to do some good. And together, there's a lot of good that we can do.
That was a great example. Thank you for sharing that. Mentorship is so important in my eyes, and special shout out to Ashley because she's been a fantastic mentor for me. And just something about having someone to assure you throughout the process is very helpful. So thank you for bringing up ADAPT. That's a perfect segue to my next question. Could you speak about your experience as a founding member of ADAPT, why and how you embarked on creating it?
So ADAPT.legal is a 501c3 nonprofit. ADAPT stands for Advancing Diversity Across Patent Teams, although we are not a patent-specific organization. Basically, we're a group of friends. We got together. We were all passionate about helping the next generation and trying to create more inclusivity within our profession and making our profession a welcoming space, right? Because we are an ecosystem within ourselves. And when we thought about what to do, we looked around to see what was already out there. And then we found out that there's a lot already out there. And it's really good work. And why would we want to reinvent the wheel when somebody else is already doing a good job? And so ADAPT was founded on three principles. The first is accessibility to information. The second is connection to people. And the third is power by technology. So when we talk about accessibility information, it's about how do we make sure that everybody who is part of this ecosystem, who wants support, can get support? And how do we make sure that people who want to help have the path to help? Right? If they have, you know, an 8 hours in their day to help, or if they have just a single hour. And so what we do at ADAPT is we have a platform that we maintain, and it has a number of different opportunities that people can participate in. So if you have money, there are scholarships that you can contribute to. If you have time, there's actual like volunteer opportunities that you can participate in. If you have a team and a lot of time, there are template programs that you can run yourself. For example, at Google, there are certain programs that we run, and we've templatized some of that and put that on the ADAPT platform as our contribution. So we also make information accessible. So one of the things that, you know, is very frustrating for a lot of people that I've spoken to is, well, you know, we didn't know very much about the patent profession. We accidentally found out about it. You know, I don't know, we ran into someone on the street, tripped over their leg, and they were like, oh, I'm a patent. and we, you know, start talking about it. And everyone's story is just about as random as that. And so, you know, for a, you know, very data driven, technology driven profession, one would think we could do a little bit better of making information known. And so, you know, we went about, you know, creating career guides so people can understand what the different professions are within patents and within IP. So, you know, they can make a decision that's good for them, right? And that might be the decision of whether you go to law school or not. If you go to law school, do you do part-time school? Do you do full-time school? What do you choose? And, you know, if you choose part-time school, what are the part-time schools? If you have to support a family while you're going to school, like, what are the options available? Like, are there scholarships available for patent attorneys? Are there, you know, part-time employment options that you can have? What schools could you work part-time and go to school at? And so there's a number of different things that, you know, just not available in a collective fashion, right? You have to go through and do a lot of research in order to figure out, you know, what is available. And so, you know, part of what we try to do is we just try to consolidate that information so somebody has it. One of the things that we've found is at the law school level, there's a lot of mentors, you know, at the early career stage level, it's easy to find mentors. But at the undergraduate level, it's actually kind of hard to find somebody who, you know, wants to help, right? And a lot of engineering professors are like, why on earth would you want to go to law school? I actually had a very good thesis professor who devoted a classroom of his, whatever class he was teaching that semester, to a woman from, I think, Baker Botts would come in and speak about law's profession, but that was a very unique instance. So at the undergraduate level, it's hard to find mentors. It's hard to find people to talk to. So we identified that as a whole where we didn't think there were very many programs, if any programs out there that existed to help these people. And so we created a mentorship program where we pair six mentors to every mentee to help them start learning about what this profession is and giving them a network to start relying on, right? And it could be that you don't connect with every mentor, but some mentors connect you to the next mentor. And then you start to have this network effect and you start building the village that you need in order to get through this pipeline. So that's part of the goal of connection, our connection to people pillar. But we have, you know, a number of different initiatives that fall under there. For example, we found out that, a lot of organizations are working to get the word out there about patent profession, right? And so we thought, great, let's just work with all of them. And so together with the BTAP Bar Association, as well as IPO and AIPLA, we put together what we call the Student Outreach Program, where we send people in the profession to different schools to talk about both what it means to have a patent, right, for an undergraduate engineer. Like, this is how you might be able to benefit your career if you get a patent, mm-hmm. and, you know, giving them that first exposure to what IP is. And then also creating that artificial first exposure to what it means to be a IP professional, so that if they're not feeling engineering at the end of undergrad, or, you know, 10 years from now, they're looking for a career change, they'll have that first moment where they're like, oh, I've heard of this thing called IP. Let me explore it further. So we're doing that at the undergraduate level. It's a learning process, but we've run the first of our events, and some of them have actually gone very well, where we've had, you know, quite an audience of people learning about both, you know, what are patents, what's IP, as well as what are careers in IP.
That's definitely something I wish I had access to when I was in college. I mean, that was very recently, but I think that's an amazing initiative, because I kind of learned what patent law was by falling into it. You know, I wasn't aware of it when I decided, hey, I want to go to law school. So I might have, who knows, I might have changed my career path if I had been aware. So I think that's a really great initiative, and mentorship opportunities are hard to come by, I'd say, in undergraduate school. So I think that's amazing. Within ADAPT specifically, how are you helping engage growth of DEIA initiatives in IP?
So at ADAPT, we now have, I think, over 70 members. And so we spent a lot of last year growing the organization and, you know, making sure that people were plugged into discussions and were contributing their knowledge. And so that, you know, we had more experiences, more perspectives to draw from as we talked about, you know, what things we can do to help make sure that everyone feels included in the profession. And so this year, you know, we're really trying to make sure that, you know, people who want to volunteer for something have something to volunteer for, and we're able to, you know, like whatever stage of the pipeline it is that people want to help, or, you know, what it is they're looking for, that they're getting that, right? ADAPT is a community. You know, we support people who want to be supported. We try and help people find opportunities to help if what they want to do is they're looking to help. And so we're hoping to make sure that we cover both sides next year, so that all of our members are getting what they want when they join the organization. So really, it's, you know, a lot of connecting people with other people to learn about different perspectives and different things that people are doing, as well as making sure that people are connected with nonprofits to, you know, help certain causes that they're passionate about. In some instances, we can kind of describe us as air traffic controlling.
I can totally picture that visual. It's great to expand people's networks in that way, and it just creates more opportunities for DEIA. So I think that's amazing. So to finish off, I saw in one of your bios that you lead several of Google's partnerships with nonprofits committed to improving DEIA. Besides ADAPT, are there any other initiatives that you'd like to shout out?
Yes, I would actually like to shout out three initiatives. you know, first, very near and dear to my heart is Street Law. So Street Law is also a nonprofit. They work on advancing civil and law-related education to empower people so that they can positively transform the world. And so through Street Law, we partner with a high school, although I guess some people partner at different ages, but we partner with a high school, and we basically try to open the world a little bit more for these students. So, you know, at the high school age, it's tough, right? Like, it's very hard to like make patent attorneys at the high school. But what you want to provide them with is, a little bit more of the world, right? It's like these are other options that you have that you should think about, kind of expand the horizon a little bit, expand their perspective a little bit. And that's what we try to do in Street Law. So we actually run, we're actually getting ready to run our program in early March. But we do two classroom sessions at the Oakland High School where we teach them about different legal topics, and then they come to Google and they do a whole bunch of workshops at Google. And it's fun for them. So they're, getting to practice certain things like public speaking skills. Law as a profession becomes a little more accessible because we teach them that, hey, if you've ever negotiated with your sister on who gets to wear, this pair of shoes when, you're doing what lawyers do. We negotiate and we create options and try and divvy up the options between different interested people. And so we try and make it a little bit more accessible. And then we find that, being on campus at a large company helps them feel like, oh, they could be part of this. They can envision themselves in this setting. So it's really just opening the world a little bit more to a, creating a little bit more possibility for students. And so that's Street Law. And again, very, very near and dear to me. I've participated in that for, over a decade. Two organizations that are a little newer to me, but also, very near and dear to me. One is LEAP, which is Legal Education Access Pipeline. So they are a California-based organization, and they work with students who have graduated or are graduating college, get into law school by providing LSAT prep, mentorship to go through law school applications, because this whole process is very daunting. And, taking the LSAT is definitely a skill that you can learn. And so Cindy Lopez runs that organization. She's just a phenomenal lady helping these students get to law school, and has had a whole lot of success getting folks into good law schools, and helping them be able to have great careers and also give back to the community. And then the last organization is FDIPL, which is the Foundation for the Advancement of Diversity within IP Law. And they've also got really great programs. So they are actually concentrated on students who participate in IP or who want to be IP lawyers and patent attorneys. And they provide things like scholarship, mentorship, jobs for these students, and really help set them up for success as they get into their career. And so all three are very, very they're impactful organizations. They help at different portions of the pipeline. And what part of what we do in ADAPT is we make sure that these portions are connected, so that somebody having that Street Law experience who wants to go to law school knows what resources are available, who's available to help them get into law school. And then, once you're in law school, what available resources are there to get you to a successful role as a IP attorney? I mean, these are just a few of the things that I work on and that ADAPT works on, but there are a number of things that are in the space and at all sorts of levels of the pipeline. So if anyone is interested, info@adapt.legal is our email address. And we're very, very happy to pair anybody up with any organization or any effort that they would be interested in.
I think it's interesting. All these initiatives, for the most part, kind of relate back to ADAPT's first pillar of information access, which is so important for anyone pursuing law. So I think that's amazing. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. I had a great time. It was very insightful.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for chatting with me.